But now it's 10:15. Coming up at 11:45, Marianne Kennedy introduces World on Three, which looks ahead to Monday's late-night prom. But it's time now for the second of this evening's proms, so over to the stage of the Royal Albert Hall in London.
Good evening. Welcome back to the Royal Albert Hall. I'm Petroc Trelawney, and we're live on BBC Radio 3 this evening. Already on the platform, one of Europe's most versatile and vital new music ensembles, the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group. In the 20-plus years that the ensemble has existed, it's premiered works by over 130 British and international composers, and I'm pleased to say that they're going to keep the tradition going in this evening's prom. Later on, we'll hear the UK premiere of a BBC Radio 3 co-commission from the Danish composer Hans Abrahamsen, and we'll also be hearing the first proms performance of music by Luke Bedford. Oliver Nussen and George Benjamin on the programme as well tonight. Now, as you may know, George Benjamin was due to conduct this evening's prom. Alas, due to a death in his family, he's unable to be here, but I'm delighted to say that taking his place, an incredibly dynamic conductor who is a real advocate for music of our time, for living music. Please welcome to the stage Ilan Volkov. Ilan, welcome back. Once again to the Royal Albert Hall. We're going to start this evening with Tu Organa by Oliver Nussen, inspired by early French polyphony. Later, Claire Booth is going to sing settings of Renaissance Italian and French poetry. So is that a sort of theme for the prom, new music, but looking back?
Well, yeah, I mean, so many composers now are dealing with old music while writing, and that's nothing new, but I think in a very unique way, and this fantastic piece is both by Luke Bedford and Oli Nassan are using old ideas in a very fantastically new way. And actually both George Benjamin's piece and Hans Abrahamsen's work are dealing with old forms and old ideas. So both structurally and melodically, many of the parts of the works are quite tonal.
Well, we'll let you take your position at the rostrum to start tonight's concert with Tu Organa by Oliver Nussen. Please welcome back then to the proms the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group and conductor Ilan Volkov.
Thank you.
to Organa by Oliver Nussen, played by the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, conducted by Ilan Volkov. The first one started as a work for white only keys on a soundbox and then turned into an ensemble piece dedicated to Peter Maxwell Davis. The second conceived as an ensemble from the very start, a sequence of pitches spelling out the name Arnold Schoenberg. It was written in celebration of the 20th anniversary of the Schoenberg Ensemble of Amsterdam in 1994, who have also co-commissioned our next piece tonight, a new work by the Danish composer Hans Abrahamsen, now in his late 50s. More than 30 years ago, he wrote a wind quartet called Walden, inspired by the American writer and philosopher Henry David Thoreau. Tonight's work uses the first four letters of that title, though it's pronounced Wald, the German word for woods or forests. Earlier on, I asked Abrahamsen to explain the links with Walden and describe this new work.
It's actually a variation work. Wald could have the subtitle Variations over a theme from Walden. The theme is the first 16 bars of this woodwind quintet I wrote in 78, and I borrowed the title from the very famous book by Henry David Thoreau, Walden, which he wrote in the middle of the 19th century, where he tried to live very simple at Walden Pond. And it's a very book full of poetical descriptions of things around the pond, but also full of philosophical and also perhaps political thoughts about relation for the human being between the nature and living in a society. But it is the first 16 bars I have used, which is very simple. It consists in a way of a horn force going up, and then a response. And next time, the response comes a little earlier and more early, so gradually they too have changed places, so the response comes first. And the piece is very much about being in the forest and call and response.
There's a very interesting moment at the end of the fifth variation where you instruct the players that they should play as if there's a sudden awakening.
Yes. A piece that has inspired me a lot for this piece is Beethoven's Diabelli variations. I cannot remember the number of the variation, but they are very short variations, very fast. And then there comes, a little over the middle of the piece, a very long variation. And it's around 4.5 minutes. And it dies out very low in the low register. And then suddenly Beethoven, da-dum, da-dum. And that moment has given me the impulse that this slow variation, 5 and 4, is a kind of, I have written night music. And it's a kind of, the wood spirits have some kinds of talks together. And then suddenly the morning comes and the nature wakes, and it's a little frightened.
Hans Abrahamsen talking to me this morning when this prom was rehearsed. I should explain that we have incredibly complicated stage moves during tonight's prom, which are going to take a good few minutes, I think, to get through. We haven't got any players from the BCMG back on the platform yet, but we do have their porters and Radio 3 engineers busy moving instruments around and putting microphones in place and so on and so forth. With me here in the Radio 3 box is Julian Anderson, who I'm not quite sure if he's planning to camp out tonight because his work Fantasias is being performed, getting its London premiere in the hands of the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain at tomorrow night's prom. Julian, welcome back to Radio 3.
Well, most interesting interview, I thought, there from Hans Abrahamsen. The sense of nature being a place of threat as well as safety, and you certainly get it listening to this piece. It's a serene piece in many ways, but troubled and disturbing, and even when it's quiet, you sense there's a lot of tension underneath.
There's that very interesting moment in one of the last variations we hear where you sense there's sort of going to be a resolution, but there isn't quite. He sort of instructs the orchestra to play as if they're reaching a sort of conclusion.
Yeah, but it drifts off. And that he's a composer of subtle rhetoric. I mean, his previous piece to this is a piece called Schnee, Snow, which is incredibly quiet for much of its 50 minutes duration, and very subtle, but never obscure, always somehow retaining the simplicity of a child's nursery rhyme, or a horn call in this case, of the present piece tonight, Valt.
And he was a horn player himself.
Yeah, and you can hear that in this piece, definitely.
Just say a little bit, the players are back on stage now, but are going to tune, obviously. Just say a little bit about the instrumentation tonight, because it does have some eclectic instruments.
When you get the use in the percussion of the African thumb piano, you get the use of different kinds of tuning. I mean, a string of the double bass is tuned down a little bit, one of the harp strings also tuned down. This all gives different kinds of colour, and also the instruments are spaced in various groups across the stage in various circles and semicircles, which I hope will be audible to the listeners in stereo as well. It's very visual, this piece. You see right at the back of it a pair of trumpets, almost set apart from other people, and a violin a few steps to the right of them, almost on his own. It's a piece about people in space, I think, very much in the physical space of the hall and in the space of nature.
Well, here comes Ilan Volkov to conduct the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, the UK premiere of a Radio 3 co-commission, Valt by Hans Abrahamsen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Waltz by Hans Abrahamsen, performed by the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, conducted here at the Proms by Ilan Volkov. Bass flute, cor anglais, bass clarinet, bass trumpet, kalimba, that African tuned percussion instrument, and a piano part that requires the piano to play almost as much on the strings as on the keys, the lid of the piano off, not surprisingly. Hans Abrahamsen now coming down the side of the stage towards the platform, greeting Ilan Volkov. His composition tutors included Judge Ligeti and Per Norgård. As a young man, he was a member of the Group for Alternative Music, which sought to free new music from the restrictive and inhibited environment of the traditional concert hall. Very politically aware as well, writing a work in 1972, a symphony originally subtitled Anti-EEC Piece. Later he changed the symphony's title to Simple Symphony in C, as he put it at the time. Music cannot be against. That work receiving its UK premiere this evening, co-commission between BBC Radio 3 and Asko Schoenberg, the Dutch Amsterdam-based new music ensemble. Hans Abrahamsen back on the platform now with Ilan Volkov. The orchestra rises to its feet, the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group. Well, let's get an immediate response to hearing that from Julian, who is with me this evening, talking our way through this programme. Julian Anderson.
Well, a marvellous experience, quite different live from on CD. Hearing a stereo recording gives you a picture of the piece, but hearing it in the hall was somehow like watching a very special private game or ritual where you don't know what the rules are, but you know something very ordered is going on and messages are being passed around.
That idea of call and response that you talked about earlier in that interview.
And it draws you in. You could have heard a pin drop during that performance, the way that it casts a spell over the audience. It's a magical piece.
And what also became absolutely clear, and now it's being unpicked, was why he'd laid it out as he laid it out, in terms of the instruments on stage.
And the way, for instance, that the two trumpets, one of them a bass trumpet right at the back of the platform, called and echoed other people and sent messages back and forth from the extremes of the group. And also the use of, when I mentioned the African thumb piano, this little plucked instrument, which was placed on top of the timpani skin, the drum skin, so you get a little resonance of it, which is a magical little touch, which is slight but makes all the difference to those few sounds. It's reticent in a way, even when it's loud. It always has something more than it's saying. It's very suggestive music. It could be used, I think, without in any way compromising it, for some kind of experimental art DVD or something like that. One can imagine various kinds of art installation working with that kind of music. It's a very physical, spatial kind of music.
Well, we've got another stage move going on at the moment ahead of the next work on the programme by Luke Bedford, tonight getting its first performance here at the Proms, Au revoir toute aventure. Now, All Goes the Way of Chance, which will be sung by the soprano Claire Booth. These are settings of texts that Bedford explains are shamelessly torn from three medieval French and Italian songs, all linked by the theme of music. The sheer strangeness of the words, he continues, distance them from us. I did not update the texts to modern French or Italian, but rather chose to set them exactly as they are. Now, Julian, the first song includes the line, thus am I obliged to write using the new notes which must displease all, for 'tis altogether contrary to the good art. It's not absolutely clear whether this is a defence or an attack on modernity in the 14th century.
No, but it's a very timely kind of theme, and there's a particular branch of medieval music at that period which was violently experimental and trying new things and which caused a lot of controversy, trying new kinds of rhythm, new kinds of modes. And when you hear that music now, it does sound a bit like Elliot Carter suddenly landed in the middle of the 14th century. It's extraordinary stuff. And I think this text is a very interesting example of ancient and modern at the same time.
Just in terms of the layout, there's, I think, a difference between the odd and the even numbered songs. Is that right? even numbered songs, I think, run in a sequence, whereas the odd numbered songs are absolutely absolutely individual.
Yes, I believe that's absolutely right. And also, there's very varied writing for the instrumental ensemble through the songs. I think the use of the soprano is very subtle. This is not an operatic soprano part or anything like that. It's got a medieval aspect to it, but it's not austere. It's direct and clear in its vocal line and bold. And you can hear this man really wants to write an opera, because in fact that's what he's writing now.
Yeah, it's going to be premiered next summer. Seven Angels, with a libretto by Glyn Maxwell.
But it's not, I'm sure it's not going to be a normal opera either. It's going to be something, a special kind of music theatre piece, which will use particular kinds of sound, well, particular kinds of plot in a new way. And you can hear, I think, a foretaste of that in the use of the soprano this piece. As I say, it's not conventionally operatic, but it's dramatic.
It's less than a decade since he graduated from the Royal College of Music, just across the way here. And his position has sort of been a sort of quiet ascent, but really has become a key part of the British music scene now, hasn't
he? Yes, a very distinctive figure. Many people will have heard about 10 days ago Ollie Nussen's performance of his orchestral piece and the end of the second part of that prom, a very fine 6-minute piece called Outblaze the Sky. And this is one thing's very distinctive with Bedford is a very great focus. Each piece is very concentrated on a particular area or a particular variety of sounds and mood. I think that's true of tonight's piece too, though in fact actually I think it also marks a branching out into a wider sphere in a way, a more sense of contrast and dynamic, but still also this great sense of sonic focus. He's got a very good ear for texture, remarkable.
Is he part of a school? Is he part of an age, if you like, of young British composers?
Well, I think there are a number of British composers of his age, slightly older and slightly younger, that have emerged in the last few years as very interesting figures. Martin Suckling, Jonathan Cole, Lloyd Moore, other people. These are composers who don't actually, it seems to me, have a lot stylistically in common, but have a tendency towards plain speaking in music. The music is very direct and very clear, whatever its sound source is. In Jonathan Cole's case, currently quite experimental sound sources. In Martin Suckling's case, the use of microtones. And Luke Bedford's case, the use of modality, which you also hear in tonight's piece very clearly too.
And is it something that's English or British? I mean, is it completely different to what's happening in Germany now and France with young composers?
I hear links with what's happening in France and Germany myself. And in fact, of course, Luke Bedford lives currently in Berlin. And so that may also be... I think these are composers who look at music in a very international way.
That applause, by the way, was for the players of the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, who are taking up their position back on the platform again. But we're not quite there yet. Still a few microphones and things to get into play. Something rather balletic about the action happening on stage this evening. Claire Booth is a magnificent interpreter of new music, isn't she? I mean, she's incredibly accurate, for starters.
This is a soprano who's rapidly moved towards the forefront again in the past decade, and is now an absolute key part of new music, not only nationally but internationally. And it's very, very distinctive kind of voice, which is clear but never brutal. She can control vibrato remarkably and provide these very clean sounds or a very rich kind of sound when it's required. And you can always hear her words, which is great. It's supremely intelligent singing.
Second movement of this piece is instrumental. The third, just to give you a flavour of the words, we are going against nature, undoing that which is well done, that of which Philippe, no longer with us, gave us a fine example. We're abandoning all his work for Marchetto, who does deface it. Certainly, it is not well done. So here is Claire Booth with Ilan Volkov to join the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group as we hear the first proms performance of this new work by Luke Bedford of Watout. Our aventure. First, Crom's performance of Au revoir tout en aventure by Luke Bedford, sung by Claire Booth with the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, conducted by Ilan Volkov. You beloved knowledge, my music, oh sweet melody with fine airs, do you constantly renew lovers? Thus do I return to you, beloved music, for you do adorn every sweet act of love. Lines from the last of those poems, Italian and French poems, written in the 14th century, pulled from a book by Luke Bedford, who's making his way down now, side of the stage, onto the platform. Hands held high as he claps the orchestra. And mounts the rostrum to shake the hand of Ilan Volkov. Claire Booth, as we were saying earlier on, one of the great interpreters of contemporary music. She's heavily pregnant, her child due in 5 weeks' time, and is going to be taking a break after this concert. Back on stage in the autumn in November, she'll be singing Berio at King's Place and Copeland's Emily Dickinson songs at the Barbican with the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Luke Bedford having a busy year. Premiere of his second commission for the Halle at 3 and 2. And Of the Air, which he wrote for the Belcher Quartet. And that opera we mentioned earlier on, Seven Angels, with a libretto by Glyn Maxwell. It's been commissioned by the Opera Group and by BCMG, and it'll be premiered next summer. Welcome if you've just joined us. Radio 3 live this Friday night at the Proms, and the final work on the programme is by the man who shaped this concert and was due to conduct it, George Benjamin. He's 50 this year, as I mentioned earlier on, not here because of a death in his family. We're going to finish by hearing his three inventions for chamber orchestra, written in the mid-90s, three movements, the outer ones dedicated to his two composition teachers, Olivier Messiaen and Alexander Gurr. Julian Anderson, composer whose work Fantasias is performed by the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain tomorrow night here at the Proms, has been with me all evening. Julian, two very different influences here, but both men who had a clear impact on George Benjamin's life and career and the direction in which he took.
Yes, I mean, loosely speaking, you could say that Messiaen guided George's ear towards harmony and the colours of harmony, and that Alexander Gurr guided his ear towards the virtues of counterpoint and combining lines. And you can hear those two things interacting in all three pieces. I think that it's fair to say that the third piece marked, I would say, a very big change of direction in Benjamin's work.
And he acknowledges this sort of discrepancy, doesn't he, between the first two pieces and the third piece.
In length, yes.
Much longer, much darker. And as you say in the programme note, at first listen, it's slightly hard to believe it's actually written for the same ensemble.
Well, in fact, all three sound like quite different groups. This is one of the wonderful things George Benjamin's been so good at, is using a group of instruments to exploit to the maximum the range of colour you can get from it. In his earlier ensemble piece at First Light, you hear an ensemble of 14 sounding like a large orchestra at some points. And here, in the third invention, you would think you might be listening to perhaps Tibetan ritual music, or even at some point some massive volcanic eruption. All kinds of colours, these big low gongs that he uses, four bass drums, a perilously high contrabassoon solo at the start of the third movement, but also we shouldn't forget the fantastically brilliant high colours of the short second movement with its incredibly high oboe and clarinet writing.
And a really interesting influence there.
Yes, Burmese court music, which is a very particular kind of music which uses this very, very virtuosic percussion and high wind writing, but this not stylistically like what George does, but there's an influence in terms of sound world, perhaps. But it's reinvented, it's imagined in the composer's own language. So there's no question of exoticism or something like that. And then the first piece with its flugelhorn solo, with very tender, almost nostalgic piece, which, although in memory of Olivier Messiaen, doesn't sound anything like Messiaen, except possibly reflecting their common love of plain song, I would say, perhaps. But that's an idea of my own. George Benjamin never mentioned that.
I just wanted to pick up on the
woman who made this piece happen, Betty Freeman, photographer, great patron of new music. I mean, a huge number of people she's commissioned works from. One of those great American philanthropists.
Yes, well, thanks to Ollie Nussen, I met Betty Freeman in 1997 and was captivated by her enormous charm, great knowledge, and wit. She had a Beverly Hills house, which was portrayed in the painting by David Hockney, Beverly Hills Housewife, which amused the title amused her no end. And there she was discussing with great enthusiasm Ollie's music, the Lachenmann opera, The Little Match Girl, which she just heard the first performance of, Feldman, John Cage, Shelsey.
So she was really passionate. This wasn't someone who said, oh, you should put some money into new music. It was really something that thrilled her and interested her.
Yeah, totally interested her. And she formed personal friendships with these people, which were lasting. I mean, in the case of one of her first enthusiasms, Harry Parch, who was a very difficult figure to champion. He invented his instruments, he built his own tuning system and so on, and she helped him make all these instruments and these projects happen in the later years of his life, and started photographing, in fact, when she was making a documentary about him and somebody needed to get a photograph of him, and she simply held a camera, and she got so interested in photography that she never let go. And there's a very good book of photographs she took of all kinds of composers she was keen on, Helmut Lachenmann, Arvo Pärt, John Adams, it was a very eclectic range.
Well, there's a great picture of her in tonight's Proms programme, and don't forget you can read the Proms programme, so you can read all of Julian's notes and the text for the work we just heard by Luke Bedford at bbc.co.uk/proms. The BCMG back on the stage, they're going to tune in just a second. I just wanted to just say, Julian, something about the atmosphere tonight, because we had 6,000 people in earlier on for the Halle Orchestra, and it was that sort of prom. I would guess there are probably 600-700 people here now for this. This is this enormous great space that is the Royal Albert Hall, and yet it's a surprisingly efficient place for music like this, isn't it?
It's very versatile, isn't it? It can adapt to a chamber concert of different sizes. It has the intimacy of that, or it can be used for Mahler 8 or something. I like that about the space. The old days, they used to take these concerts of chamber sort to the roundhouse. Actually, I rather like them here. There's more sense of occasion with them here. And the acoustic, although it is, actually really does work for them.
Well, you're back here tomorrow for Fantasias.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
That's live on Radio 3 tomorrow night. Thank you very much indeed, Julian Anderson, for being with us. Ilan Volkov returns to the platform to conduct the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group in George Benjamin's Three Inventions for Chamber Orchestra.
Thank you. Thank you.
George Benjamin's Three Inventions for Chamber Orchestra, written in the mid-1990s. The first in memory of Olivier Messiaen, the last for Alexander Gerr. Ilan Volkov conducting the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group here at the BBC Proms. BCMG led this evening by Alexandra Wood. Ilan Volkov standing in for George Benjamin, but he's back here in a fortnight to conduct another new music programme. He'll be conducting the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, of which he is chief guest conductor, in a programme of works by Cage, Cardew, Feldman and Howard Skempton. That's Late Night Prom, fortnight tonight here at the Royal Albert Hall. Ilan Volkov and the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. He's back on the platform now. Julian Anderson, my guest this evening. His Fantasias gets its London premiere tomorrow in the hands of the National Youth Orchestra, conducted by Semyon Bychkov, the Symphonie Fantastique of Berlioz, and The Sorcerer's Apprentice by Ducasse, also on the programme. That starts at 7:30, live tomorrow night here on BBC Radio 3. Ilan Volkov returning once again to the stage, acknowledging the Birmingham Contemporary Music Group, who rise to their feet as we bid you for now. Good night from the Royal Albert Hall. Back to Jill Anderson at Broadcasting House.
And that was Petroc Trelawney at the Royal Albert Hall. If you'd like to submit a review of tonight's prom, then you can by visiting the proms website at bbc.co.uk/proms and click on share. Well, coming up in a few minutes, World on Three with Mary-Anne Kennedy. But first, a word about a programme tomorrow.
In this week's Sunday feature, Dance and Art in the Present Tense, Frances Burns asks the question, can and should a modern dance survive the death of its maker?
Perhaps we should go to see dancers like we go and see a person we love, whose time we know is short. Now, soon, or never.
That's the right idea. Keep moving, look, look.
People would come out repeating those little hand movements. After those first 2 years, that had gone. But that's just one example of how a step is never quite there again.
The ephemeral nature of dance is one of the things that is so thrilling about being in the theatre with a live orchestra, live dancers, live audiences, and then it's gone.
After a Dance Maker Dies, this week's Sunday feature at 10 in the evening here on BBC Radio 3.
Prayer by Andrzej and Roxana Panufnik. It was played by the Isis Ensemble, conducted by Jakes Cohen. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 11:45, time now for World on 3. Ahead of the World Roots Academy prom at 10 o'clock on Monday evening, Marianne Kennedy is joined by the scheme's beneficiary, Kayam Alami.
حبك شباب ترك خلته وناسه وراحة البال ورضى بلوعته وآته وعذابه. أنا وياك يا ويلي، أنا وياك مثل الماي والنار، أنا وياك مثل الماي والنار، أنا مثل وردة وحيدة بوسط غابة، مثل وردة وحيدة بوسط غابة. والله ولا والله ولا والله المنتير في العين والمن نظرها،
2B Sounds from Iraq via the typical cassette dubbing route that sent this music into homes throughout the Iraqi diaspora and the Middle East, into Europe, and in the case of this particular US compilation on the Sublime Frequencies label, the Iraqi community in Detroit, Michigan. That was Salah Abdel Ghafoor, a singer and poet, most recently exercising his influence through his music by exhorting his fellow Iraqis to vote. I'm Marianne Kennedy, and you're listening to World on 3, where the focus tonight is on all things Iraqi. It's a curtain raiser, really, for Monday night's special BBC Prom, which marks the culmination of this year's inaugural World Roots Academy collaboration between Iraqi star Ilham Al-Madfai and the young English-based oud player Khayyam Alami. But tonight's programme has many delights of its own to offer. We have a specially recorded concert of Iraqi makam by the mother of the genre, Farida Muhammad Ali. We'll be hearing a performance from the mentor of the World Roots Academy scheme, Ilham Al-Madfai, and joining me in the studio to walk me through what's hot in Iraq's understandably chaotic contemporary music scene is this year's World Roots scholar, Khayyam Alami. Khayyam, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Hello, thanks for having me.
I wanted to ask about the current scene in Iraq. Music is something that exists, that continues to exist, no matter where people are and in what situation they find themselves. What is the scene as it stands just now?
I think it's still quite difficult for a lot of the musicians. The pop mainstream's kind of taken over because of the ease of diffusion of those songs via mobile phones and video clips on TV stations, etc. And I think also the public just were wanting to listen to something that would just help them escape a little bit more. While Iraq's had this really rich musical and song tradition for a long time, that still hasn't really picked up because concerts are difficult to arrange. You only have the kind of media, the radio and the TV as the main outputs, really. So it's still kind of difficult there, I think. And even the orchestras that were there that are still trying to carry on now are having trouble. Their concerts are programmed at like 11 o'clock in the morning, just in case, you know, people are still afraid. So
Saddam very much recognised the power of music and especially of singers to be able to convey messages and ideas and just image. Is a musician's ability to influence, no matter where you're coming from, is it still valued or recognised in Iraq? Does that role exist now in a new situation?
I think it does, but it's also more about representation, I think, at the moment, because if you want to talk about the way Saddam was at the beginning when he first came into power, he was very much funding the arts and very much supportive of the arts, in particular artists that would go outside of Iraq and perform, because this made him look good to the world community. But that didn't really ever make the role of the musician or the singer detrimental, let's say, in the view of the Iraqi public, because they've always had such a prominent position and been very much respected.
Are you saying in some ways, in terms of the Iraqi public or the Iraqi in exile public, that almost what Saddam was doing was almost hanging on the coattails of the reputations of well-established people who were there in their own rights and had achieved what they were going to achieve?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there were many singers that had to kind of toe the line in order to be able to continue working, and those of them who didn't want to and left Iraq in that period, they struggled to continue working because at the end of the day, the Iraqi population that became exiled was so scattered that it's very difficult for those musicians to find and those singers to find their audience. You're dealing with very small numbers, and how can you build on something that really needs a cultural background to, in order to be able to be appreciated? So,
but that audience is there to be found in some places, and especially in exile communities. We've picked out some highlights of Iraqi music to play throughout tonight's programme. And having just spoken about that, I suppose this first artist, Kazim Al-Sayer, would be a perfect example of that, because I remember in Edinburgh at the Awards for World Music back in 2004, not only did he win one of the category awards, but he won the public award by a massive majority, and the entire Scottish Iraqi community must have been out there in the Usher Hall and waylaid him after the gig, you know, stopped the car and hold him out, had to have the pictures taken. This is something that would be part of his life wherever he was going.
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's a massive star and he's been in the public eye for many years and been very, very popular, and not just with the Iraqis but also with all the other Arab communities. So,
well, let's hear him in action here. This is from the album Ana Wa Laila, and this is Ila Anti.
أشهد أن لم امرأة أتقنت اللعبة إلا أنت،
إلا أنت،
واحتملت حماقتي عشرة أعوام كما احتملت. أشهد أن لم امرأة أتقنت اللعبة إلا أنت،
إلا أنت،
واحتملت حماقتي عشرة أعوام كما احتملت. واصطبرت على جنوني مثلما صبرت، وقلمت أظافري ورتبت دفاتري، وأدخلتني روضة الأطفال إلا تجتاحني في لحظات العشق كالزلزال. أشهد أن امرأة تجتاحني في لحظات العشق كالزلزال، تحرقني تغرقني تشعلني تطفئني تكسرني نصفين كالهلال. تشعلني تطفئني تكسرني نصفين كالهلال، تحتل نفسي أطول احتلال وأجمل احتلال إلا
أنني خيرت أو كان لي مفتاح باب القدر المقفل لو أنني خيرت أو كان لي مفتاح باب القدر المقفل لاخترت عن الدنيا الأسى أنني لم أهبط الدنيا ولم أرحل أتسمع الديك أطال الصياح وقد بدا في الأفق نور الصباح أتسمع
That was Nuna Elhana singing with Munir Bashir, Lo Anani Khuyir Tu, and little gasps coming from you as you're listening to the music. What is it that you find special about this in particular?
It's just like phenomenal musicianship, really. It's so, these particular compositions by Munir Bashir, as far as I'm aware, they're the only songs that he's composed, and they're based on the poetry of Omar Khayyam, translated by Ahmad Rami, the Egyptian poet. And there's just something about the sound of this ensemble of Munir Bashir's oud playing, Noon Al-Hanna's voice, which is just stunning, stunningly beautiful. And especially these free rhythm, improvised parts that, just takes me elsewhere. I love hearing very simple melodic instrument and voice in this way. It really takes you elsewhere.
Khayyam, thank you so much. And our World Roots Academy scholar is going to stay with us. It might have taken him somewhere, but I think he's going to come back. He's going to stay throughout tonight's Iraqi World on 3. And we're going to turn just now to the artist that Khayyam Alami's been able to spend time with over the past year, and a concert that features both their talents. This is an extract from a gig which was recorded just a few weeks ago at the culmination of their time together in Amman in Jordan. We join the audience in the family restaurant, a wee venue called Cafe Kutar. It just happens to be the name of one of Ilham's biggest hits, but it's perfect as well for a place like this, welcoming in the Qatar or the guests.
مقدود الوردية ونظراتك من قلبي حلوة برقم عشرة فكرنا شو كل عصرية بعيونك شفنا ولاية يرقنا وحبنا وطيبة يا حلوة برقم عشرة فكرنا شو كل عصرية حلوة حلوة والله حلوة حلوة يا البغدادية
Al-Madfai in action at Cafe Qatar in Amman in Jordan, accompanied by a lineup of local musicians including Kusai Abdul Jabbar, Kasim Tashtush, Hassan Minawi, Safa Garib and Mundar Jabir. And of course, the World Roots Academy scholar himself, Khayyam Alami on Oud. And in tomorrow's World Roots, you'll be able to hear more about the 3 weeks Khayyam spent with his mentor Ilham in the Middle East. Khayyam, what have been the little side swipes and unexpected things that have come your way as a result of this?
One of the main things was having the chance to talk to Ilham and his wife a lot about their past and the way that things have been for them, which was interesting and moving many occasions. Even though, you know, he's done very well and been very successful, there's still a big longing and a pining. And it was nice to just get under the surface of things a little bit, actually, and hear about some of those stories. And the other stuff, for example, I met a really wonderful lady by pure chance. It turned out that her daughter used to study at the school where I used to go to. And so she took me to my old school and spoke to the headmistress and allowed me to go in the school and have a wandering around in Damascus. Sorry, yeah. So it's an extra musical thing that happened, but it played a big part in creating the power of that whole trip and the importance of it.
And for you, as someone who wants to get to the roots of the music and for whom those roots are important, did this travelling and being able to spend time with people, did it give you what you wanted on that side?
Funnily enough, actually, what it gave me more of was being able to see what's going on contemporarily, because this is one of the most difficult things that I've found, is trying to figure out, well, what people are really doing, because when it comes to the traditional stuff and the roots of this kind of music, you can study from recordings and from materials that are available. But finding out what people are actually up to is quite difficult because it's not really in the media very often. And I was 100% sure that people were doing some really, really interesting far out stuff, and it turned out that they were. So for me, you know, as much as I'd be interested in the tradition side of things, you also have to see what's going on now, because nothing is static. Everything's dynamic and changing all the time.
Did that bring things out in your own playing and your own approach by maybe shaking you up a little bit?
I guess it wasn't so much that it shook me up and made me kind of think, oh, actually people are doing something different. It made me feel more confident about wanting to do that myself anyway.
We're going to play something by Nasir Shamma. Tell me what this represents in terms of your playing.
What it represents for me is that a really new approach to the oud that Nasir Shamma has kind of developed over the last 10 years. And this is one of his most difficult pieces. It's played in this recording with his ensemble, but it can be played solo. And it's one of the most difficult things to play and an absolute killer favourite. If you play this anywhere, everybody falls in love with it straight away. Nasir Shamma, as an Iraqi musician who's really achieved something in exile, has been a massive inspiration.
Let's listen to him then. This sounds like a double winner. Nasir Shamma and Ishraq.
Thank you.
was Ishraq and Nasir Shama. Chaim, that was really quite spectacular.
Yeah. Something, isn't it?
Is that something that instrumentalists in general would respond to and aspire to, or is it particularly the Anoud thing?
I think, yeah, it's definitely an Anoud thing, because he's... you could look at it in a way, similar way as what Paco de Lucia did for the flamenco guitar. And so all the young oud players are all aspiring to be able to play at that speed with that kind of virtuosity.
I mean, yeah, it sounds pyrotechnic.
Yeah.
Is it really having pushed the technique and the possibilities of the instrument away beyond?
It's light years ahead of anything that's... Some people will criticise and say that it's just speed and it's just virtuosity, but nobody made the oud sound like that before him. And so you have to give him credit for that.
Well, we're going to move from one great Iraqi artist to another, and to the tradition of maqam. Performer Farida Muhammad Ali, who herself was a student of Munir Bashir and has mastered what is still